All right, welcome to RSP Cast number 17. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, and today I'm joined by none other than Drew Lieberman of the Sideline Hustle. And if you've never heard of the Sideline Hustle, it's probably because you're, you know, a fantasy guy, or you watch, you know, mainstream football news and analysis on television, which is all great stuff. But, you know, what Drew does is that he works, I'm going to let him tell you a little bit more about it, but he gets to work with people who are trying to play the wide receiver position. He's a coach. He does a lot of tutoring. He has work. He has experience in the college game. He works with college players, and he's a guy that when you look at his work on Twitter at the Sideline Hustle, is the name of his site. Really, I mean, there's a lot of people doing great analysis out there, but I think this guy's really one of the best at what he does. His YouTube videos are so instructive, and they're so well produced. It's not just a recipe listing of techniques. There's also a little bit of philosophy embedded with it to kind of give you a really an overall understanding of what the route's trying to accomplish, and or the options the receiver has at certain points in a route based on what the defender is doing. So I'm just super impressed with Drew's work. And so I'm proud to have him on the show today. Drew, welcome to the RSP cast.
Thank you. I really appreciate the kind words. That means everything. It's cool to hear from someone of your stature.
Well, I mean, I think my stature is more in the fantasy community. So I'm hoping that, you know, to have more folks who, you know, though I have some folks certainly in the, you know, in the football realm, but, you know, guys like you, I get a chance to learn from, you know, and that's something that I just really prize and value. So, Drew, if you could tell our audience who may be new to your work, you know, your background and how you got into this and what you're doing.
Yeah, so I'm 27 years old right now. I graduated, played football at Wesleyan University, which is a small liberal arts school in Connecticut, and then got hurt as a junior in college. I played quarterback, blew up my throwing shoulder, ended up coaching, becoming the quarterback coach there my junior, senior year, which ended up, you know, the injury ended up being a huge blessing in disguise because it kickstarted my coaching career. Was hired by the University of Albany and legendary coach Bob Ford. It was his last year before retirement. Worked for them for a year as a GA, and then the next year was hired at Rutgers as an off-the-field assistant. That was 2014, and then I was promoted to the assistant receivers coach and graduate assistant the next year. Did that for a year, and then so that was 2 years at Rutgers. Worked the next spring ball after the staff got fired. I was there with Coach Ash and that staff for about 4 months. Then really, you know, towards the end of my last season at Rutgers, the full regular season, I kind of fell out of love with the lifestyle of Division I football. Like when I first got there, I was all for it, and I loved my experience, and I learned so much. Like it's really where all of, you know, my knowledge now comes from. Was, you know, you're working 20 hours a day, 365 days a year, pretty much. Like you're just taking in so much knowledge, and you're around so many great coaches, and I love the experience for that. And there's nothing like coaching in front of 100,000 people. But just the, like to succeed at that level and really last, you have to love football more than anything. And you have to sacrifice relationships and family and be away a lot. And like, just looking forward, like I'm very close to my family. And the crazy thing is I was at Rutgers, and I'm from New York City originally. So it's the only school that's even close to New York City, a major college football school. So I was looking ahead, like, I don't think I'm going to enjoy the lifestyle because my next job, I'm going to be, you know, the wide receivers coach at Arizona State or somewhere, anywhere across the country. So I decided, I left Rutgers, went back to my alma mater, Wesleyan University, to get my master's degree and coach football there, not really knowing what I wanted to do next, but knowing it would be like a good place to figure some things out. I ended up coming up with the Sideline Hustle during that time. It started where I wanted to. Oh, yeah. So. And so it started with me. So growing up, I always thought I was going to be a writer. So I figured, you know, let me try this writing thing. And as I was writing, I was like, all right, I can't sit in a dark room and just write and make that my profession. Like it's not going to do it. So I was talking to Coach Friedgen, Ralph Friedgen at the time, who I worked for at Rutgers, who's the head coach of Maryland for 10 years and won a national championship. Really unbelievable coach. And I talked to him about writing his biography. He said he wanted to write books about quarterback play. And that was kind of the inspiration to us creating the Side of the Hustle podcast, because we figured a podcast would be better than a book nowadays. And then we found some other guests, started, you know, a podcast, just kind of winging it. I taught myself how to produce it myself, just watching YouTube videos for like 3 months. Taught myself how to produce videos as well. And we just kind of winged it and had, you know, Gary Nova, former quarterback at Rutgers, Mike Teal, who's the head coach at Don Bosco, former quarterback at Rutgers, Leonte Carew, who plays in the NFL, and like a couple other guys we knew on the podcast, and just made up topics of what was going on in the business at that time, from recruiting to, you know, training camp to preparing for the first game, dealing with crowd noise, just different topics like that from kind of a coach's perspective. And then during that time, I started breaking down film on Twitter, just taking everything I had learned from the great coaches I'd been around. And just, you know, like I said, I kind of learned some skills on Final Cut Pro, how to break things down. And that's kind of how the T-Shapes thing developed. And after about five or six of them, they just started to blow up on Twitter and really took on a following of its own that's just been growing by the day.
Yeah, it's been excellent, you know, and it's fun because we had a chance to talk, you know, probably a few months ago, and gotten familiar with your work maybe a little bit before that, but just getting the chance to, you know, there's so many guys out there. I mean, you know, a lot of my guests probably know Matt Harmon from the fantasy world of just doing some analytical work of charting wide receivers and talking about their play and looking at the film, you know, to guys like Brad Kelly, who's a high school coach, who is like, I think he's a high school assistant coach or intern or something of that nature, who's doing some work on Twitter that's pretty nice. But, you know, I really just, you know, giving shout outs to them, but I just think that, you know, Drew, a lot of the work that you're doing is just, you know, it's fairly complete. It's really complete on the level of, it's not just giving a recipe of technique or giving a number result, but it's giving you a kind of a holistic picture of that position. And it's just, and the way those videos are produced, I mean, I'm envious because I look at, you know, I do videos where I break down players and I try and isolate one or two things that are interesting about that play. But what you're doing in 30 seconds is just, you know, sometimes in your 30 second videos, you're showing so much and it's so clear, and you, all you have to do is watch it a couple of times and you're kind of, you know, you get a much better feel of things. So let's talk today about some things about route running. I think to just start with, I mean, what is something that, you know, someone who has, you know, had to learn the position in the way that you have, what are some things that, you know, maybe as a former quarterback, you know, what you learned about wide receiver play between the time that you stopped playing the game and began coaching the game? What are some things that really stood out?
So, I mean, really everything. I mean, I was blessed to have so many great teachers when I was at Rutgers. I worked for Ben McDaniels, who was the receiver coach my first year there, who's Josh McDaniels' younger brother, and just had so much knowledge of the game. And the next year I worked for Anthony Campanelli, who's the defensive coordinator at Boston College. Who's a defensive coordinator at Boston College now. He was the wide receivers coach at Rutgers at the time, though, that second year. And those two guys taught me two very different things. Ben was very technical and really taught me the technique of route running, which he learned from PJ Fleck, who PJ Fleck's now the head coach at Minnesota. But he's like the godfather of wide receiver play at Rutgers, and he really established a real culture there in the wide receiver room as far as technique. And then Anthony Campanelli is the greatest motivator of kids, of players that I've ever been around, the greatest preacher of toughness and discipline and accountability. And so I really kind of like developed an awesome philosophy from both sides, from the technical side of a system that was created before me that I learned and was able to replicate, but then was able to learn how to motivate kids. And I think that it's a combination of both. It's a combination of route running ability, which that's great. Like, you know, that's great to see at combines and people can win one-on-ones. But really the thing that makes a great receiver is the way he talks to himself in the line of scrimmage, the plan, his film study before the game. And because everything as a route runner is pre-planned. There's nothing like they've watched so much film. They go through the practice. They all off season, they're practicing situations, practicing beating different coverages. So all this stuff is kind of pre-planned, and it's just about them to go out there and execute their plan. And a lot of that then on game day comes down to the way they talk to themselves, how poised they can be, and the details they can key into that they studied on film now to see it on the field and then execute their plan that they kind of practiced all week.
Yeah, and those details come fast. And I think that's what people don't realize is that there's so many small details that they're looking at and they're trying to execute, and what they're gauging is happening so quickly that it can look like it's improvisational. But even if you're looking at someone who was an improvisational musician with that background, I can tell you that, you know, everything's maybe not planned in the sense of what you're going to play, but it's planned in the sense of how you're going to react to what you hear, because you're studying detail so much. Would you say that there's a kind of a parallel in that sense?
I think that's exactly it. And I think that the probably the biggest thing that stood out to me coaching at the D1 level with those coaches was just at how small the details are that you key into and how precise everything is. When you're studying, if you're playing against press coverage, like, you're studying a guy's body language, his facial expression, the foot he's leaning on. But then at the same time, you're also looking at the coverage behind it to get indicators where, you know, if a linebacker lines up a yard inside where he normally does, that might be an indicator that there's pressure coming and it's going to be a different coverage. Or, you know, you see there's one indicator on film where when the safety is this far outside the hash, you know, they have one coverage coming or one pressure coming. And there's those small details that defenses have that you can kind of key in on that help you predict what's going to happen. And that helps you create your plan as well. So similar to what you're saying, like, you don't necessarily know exactly what you're going to see, but you've studied the details so much. Once you see it, you know how to react to it.
So let's begin there, because I think that we can go even a little further into this, is that let's start at the line of scrimmage and talk about what a wide receiver is assessing there. Cause I've always learned it as, you know, I think is kind of that coverage triangle of looking at what the cornerback, the linebacker, and the safety is doing. And so, you know, take us through the mind of what a wide receiver is being taught at the line of scrimmage in terms of reading coverage, and how maybe that's the transition that I always thought is the toughest one between college and the NFL, because you see guys run routes well, and maybe they have to learn different details there, but it's so much about being on the same page with the quarterback with that reading.
And you're exactly right. And that's what I was kind of getting at when I was saying, you know, the most important thing is how you talk to yourself. That's just what I preach to my players all the time. But exactly what that means is talking yourself through a process of reading the defense. First of all, where am I aligning? You know, what's my route? Then reading the defense, what's the coverage? Where's the cornerback's leverage? How am I going to attack him? And you are reading that coverage triangle, which is the cornerback, the most outside linebacker, and the safety. And those different leverages of, you know, a low and outside corner, you know, a heavy inside leverage linebacker and a safety over the top. That's a good cover two look. And then as that starts to shift during the cadence and everything, you know, that gives you indicators as to what to expect. And then as like an outside receiver, for example, you're reading that so you kind of can predict how the corner is going to play you. And then you're looking at where he's aligned. And the first thing at the line of scrimmage is that you want to attack his leverage. So if he's aligned outside of you, you want to take an outside stem and attack him there. If he's aligned inside of you, you want to give him a heavy move inside, because they're aligned there to protect those areas. They don't want you to go there. So my theory as a wide receivers coach is to attack those areas that they're trying to protect and make them feel threatened right away and put them in panic mode. And then from that instance, now you control the rest of the route. Once you get him on his heels, because you've attacked him where he doesn't want you to go, because the coach has said, hey, we're bringing pressure inside, you align an inside leverage press, and if he crosses your face, it's a touchdown. So you know, that's the last thing you can do. He's going to panic when you attack the inside really hard and have to jump inside to protect it. Now you control the route if you want to work back out and run whatever else you're running, because now he's reacting to you. You know where you're going, and he doesn't.
Nice. So let's talk a little bit more about just even press releases. It's funny, when I first started doing this, it was so basic for me. I mean, the RSP was kind of like, okay, I have a really good process of how to attain knowledge and learn how to evaluate, but and learn the game through doing that. But it was my own process for how I learned, because when I began, I mean, it was like, even now, some of my more basic checklist stuff for wide receivers needs to be updated, because I look at things like, you know, only, you know, when I'm looking at coverage or tight coverage at, you know, at the line, I'm thinking, okay, well, can he do a basic three step or a basic four step release? Or can he do an arm over? Can he do, you know, a swim move? But there are so many different types of techniques when it comes to, you know, releasing from the line of scrimmage. What are some things that, I mean, you know, I guess my question would be for you is that what are some things that certain types of techniques that you use with your hands and your feet based on what the coverages look like in terms of the depth or where, how they're aligned?
Right. So I guess it's a great question. And I have I think a different answer than most people. So the way I've been taught to teach releases is you teach specific techniques and they have certain movements that they practice, et cetera. But, you know, as you said, it's very improvisational. So you don't exactly know what's coming. So the way I teach it is I give them a toolbox and I give them a framework of, you know, really we have 10 release commandments. And I can actually, I'll read them off to you right now. So like the first absolute release commandment, and again, it's a toolbox of things to work under, and it has to prepare them to adapt to any situation, but they know the rules of how to adapt to it. Similar to what you were saying, like know how to react because they have certain rules, and these are the release commandments. So the first one is have a plan, like I talked about. And that's like you were saying, reading the coverage triangle, what is the triangle, you know, and then have a plan of how to attack them. And that's the first thing that's the most important thing that they have to learn how to talk themselves through that. And then the second one is being patient, but sudden, meaning you don't need to run off the line of scrimmage. You don't need to rush. But when you be patient, assess where he's at and then attack his weaknesses. But then when you do make your move, you have to be sudden. You have to be violent. You got to get going. The third one is eat up space, which to me is one of the most important ones. Like whatever space, DBs don't like space early in a route because then they don't have time to see what's going on. And they don't have time to react. And again, you always control every route because you know where you're going. So if you eat up space right away and you get him on his heels, you dictate the tempo of that route. But if he's in press coverage and you start going side to side and you're not attacking him vertically, that's what the DB wants you to do. He wants you to go horizontal and prevent you from getting up the field. So the first thing to really dictate the route is to eat up space. And then, you know, from there, there's things like you were saying, hand combat, where I talk to to think of it like you're a boxer where you want your hands to be in tight and then they can explode violently, but you don't want to reach for hand combat. And there's different techniques. The number one technique I teach is called wipers, which is two hands with your fingertips to the sky, violently wiping down on their you know, two hand jam or one hand jam. I don't really love the swim move because a lot of times when guys pick their arm up high, it exposes a lot of their chest to the DB to get his hands in there. So I really teach more of a rip, and the rip is like to rip low, but you want to really torque your back so that when he tries to put your hands on you, you're giving him your back numbers. There's nothing really to grab onto.
And it's kind of like it ends up dipping that shoulder that where he's at away from him as well when you do that, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly. So that one's good. And then, you know, another one that a lot of people don't talk about is to always keep your feet staggered during pressing. You see the great receivers, you know, a lot of guys in the NFL, they'll have their feet parallel, you know, when they're kind of attacking the guy and eating up space. But when they make their move, their feet are always staggered because if there's a man in front of you and your feet are, you know, side by side, you can't attack, like go vertically through him. You have to step out and around him, which is, again, that's arcing. That's, you want to attack as much vertical as possible. So if you make your move inside with your feet staggered, that next step can be more vertical. You can run right through his shoulder, and that's how you're going to run by a guy right away. If a DB jumps inside, he has time to recover if you kind of have to arc outside to get vertical, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the last one really is an expression I say is low to lower. And that's just a coaching emphasis for receivers to, once you get your pads high, that's when DBs can get inside you. They can control you with physicality. They can also kind of match your quickness because you're never as explosive when you're standing high. So I tell my guys, like, nothing good ever happened. Nothing athletically, like anything good athletically ever happens from standing up tall. You know what I mean? Like nothing happens. You always have your knees bent. So you're in a low athletic stance. And from there, you should come off and lower, even lower from there. So low to lower. And your pad level is always low. You're always, you know, attacking, what I say, on your insteps, which is the inside part of your feet. So that kind of creates the hip shiftiness, where if you're on the inside part of your feet when you're shifting and juking, it gives you a natural hip shift that really can shake a guy at the line of scrimmage.
That's great. This is just such great stuff. And it's so funny because when you talked about the first commandment and really talking about wanting to get off that line where you're kind of more vertical rather than side to side type of movements, mm-hmm. and being patient, you know, and being patient with that, it reminds me of things that we often kind of see this time of year in social media.
Real quickly, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. Yeah. I just want to give credit where credit's due. That release commandment list is all credit to PJ Fleck, who is the head coach at Minnesota. I learned it from Ben McDaniels, and then Anthony Campanelli, but I know that he is the one who originated it. And I have never met him, but I have the utmost respect for him.
Wonderful. I mean, no, it's great. Yeah. And it's fun because you're giving us some people to kind of, to look towards, you know, in terms of, you know, any kind of information that we can find or just understand the source. So that's terrific.
Yeah.
But yeah, getting back to that, I mean, you look at like training camp nowadays and the way that it's, you know, reporters look at information, or you see fans and they're showing these YouTube videos of guys or clips. And what's interesting to me is I remember thinking back to the Senior Bowl and seeing a player who is with an NFL team now, but is probably fighting for a roster spot and was a former quarterback trying to transition to the wide receiver position. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching people just being really excited about, you know, his moves at the line of scrimmage as a receiver trying to get open. And they were wowed by the very things that you mentioned that are probably not the best things to do, but because they were, you know, they were flashy and they were in a one-on-one situation where it was a drill more than it was a actual play. You know, you look at it and I can see how like the amateur looks at this and goes, or someone who may not have studied the position in depth looks at it and goes, wow, he's got a lot of moves and he got free doing that. And I'm thinking, he's going to be late on his break doing what he did, you know? Exactly. And so it's one of those things that, as you mentioned, patient, but explosive, but also efficient with what's going on there. So, you know, what are some, you know, let's get into maybe some, let's start from like maybe going deep to short with some of the routes here. I mean, and talk about some of these routes. What's, you know, just let's start with the simplest route, you know, or the simplest looking route on the route tree, which is just the go route, you know, the streak, the nine route. Just what goes into running just a good deep route other than speed? Because people would think, yeah, you just got to be fast, you know, but there's more to it.
So I guess the first thing on that I tell guys when you're running vertical, you know, most of the time you're throwing verticals. I don't want to say most of the time, but you know, at least in high school, most college football, you're mostly throwing verticals versus press coverage. You know, once you have receivers with elite speed at the D1 level, at the NFL level, that's when you're thrown by guys in loose coverage and stuff. But you know, I would say if he's pressed up, you know, the first thing I tell my guys is the first place to win, and really the best place to win on a vertical route where there's no other breaks, is at the line of scrimmage. So make sure you have a plan, you know, attack him where opposite of where you want to win. You know, if he's outside leverage, you might want to really jump outside and then win back inside. If he's inside leverage, vice versa. But make sure you have a solid plan, because that, like, you can't just half-ass that release. There are some routes, like, you know, if you're going to stop short and you're versus press, you might half-ass the release because you don't want to kill him when you're going to end up breaking into him later. You want him just on your inside hip. But on a go route, you want to try and get as much separation as possible at the line of scrimmage. And like I mentioned before, the next thing after you make your move is to get as vertical as possible. And, you know, most splits, the wide receiver splits, is around the top numbers or bottom numbers for a go route. And once you release, you want to stay as vertical as possible in what we call hold the line. And hold the line just means not getting too close to out of bounds. Usually the line along the bottom of the numbers, maybe a yard or two wider than the bottom of the numbers, is as wide as you want to get as a receiver. You don't want to get pushed out any wider than that, because now you're not giving the quarterback enough room to throw you outside and where you'll be open. So as soon as you release vertical, if you can get the DB to jump inside, you want to get as vertical as possible and what we call stack him, which means you want to get right on top of him with him chasing directly behind you. You don't want to be like side to side. If you can get directly on top of him, now he's in full chase mode. And as long as the quarterback puts the ball out front, you can go get it. But if he is side by side, and he's trying to push you out of bounds, what I tell guys is to fight pressure with pressure. So if you know, if you know that the DB is going to be able to come back and close a space and try and create contact to push you into the sideline, you need to expect that, lean into him physically, you know, be violent and expect pressure with pressure. And when he puts his hands on, you get his hands off, you know, with certain hand combat moves. And then, you know, you're running as fast as you can and expecting the quarterback to throw you deep. The thing I tell guys is after you release and you get into your route, keep on a go route, a five-step go route, keep your eyes down for 15 yards. Don't look for the ball. Keep your eyes down and run as fast as you can for the first 15 yards. 15 yards is the look point. And then at that point, you're looking straight up into the air because the ball should already be delivered. You're not looking back at the quarterback. You're looking up in the air to find the ball, and you're going to run under it. You know, if it's thrown outside of you, you want to hold your line as long as possible and then fade to it late, because the DB has no sight of the ball at that point. So you don't want to get, if you fade to it early, he can close the space and make a play on it. But if you see the ball and he doesn't, and you fade to it late, it's hard for him to make a play. Yeah, and that's the last thing.
You're getting that kind of I always call it kind of like a horizontal separation. You're getting that last bit of separation because of what you said of owning that sideline where you're not too far. So that's great. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, and then just the last thing, that we talk about is if the ball is ever underthrown, like you got to go compete for the football. And especially if the DB is in a trail position, like if it's underthrown, I tell them to jump through the DB, like go up and get it, go try and catch it, but don't jump back. Try and jump up or jump even forward. And if he's chasing you, worst thing he's going to do is tackle you, and it's going to be pass interference. Best case, you make a spectacular catch.
Yeah, you showed an excellent example of that yesterday on Twitter an example of, I think it was Marquise Valdes-Scantling, who's trying out for the Packers, kind of faded away. And then I didn't see who the receiver was. I think it was a Browns receiver.
Rashard Higgins.
Higgins. There you go. So Hollywood Higgins, really planting that foot and diving forward over the defender. Yeah, that was great. Yeah,
exactly. And that's the thing. Like the biggest thing from like a philosophy standpoint is like, if you get press coverage on a go ball or you get a corner at 6 yards who's sitting flat footed and you can run by him, like, it's kind of like a pride thing. Like that's what you as a receiver pride yourself on, is being able to be a deep threat and run by guys. And then it's just about competing. Like the ball's in the air, it might not be a perfect ball, it might be a jump ball, but you just gotta, out compete that guy and want the ball more than him and just have poise in that moment and focus and try and get the job done. But obviously those are low percentage throws, but there's some guys that I kind of have a knack for it, I think, because they're just competitive and they'll do whatever it takes to go up and get the football.
Cool. One last note on kind of that vertical route. It's interesting. I had a conversation with an offensive coordinator at a local high school in Atlanta, who former wide receiver at Pittsburgh State by the name of Gene Clemens, who I was on his podcast a couple weeks ago, or maybe it was last week even. I think it was just last week. And we were talking about Randy Moss and talking about Steve Smith, and they were talking about stride length and just how how the stride length of those two players were so long, and that stride length really could mess up cornerbacks in terms of what they were expecting because they ate their space so quickly into a route. And a guy like Steve Smith, you wouldn't expect that he'd have such a long stride length because he was so short.
Yeah. The best thing about Steve Smith is how, like, you're exactly right. But that guy, I was going to mention him before when I was talking about competing for the ball in the air. There was nobody more competitive than Steve Smith.
Right.
Like, but you're right. Like, for him to get going as fast as he did, open up his stride, and he did it like, 5'9", like, I honestly, like, I don't know if he was a track runner or what. Like, to me, I think that comes from the fact that he just was, so motivated and competitive before every snap. He was running as fast as he absolutely could. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't going at 92%. Like, when he was trying to get down the field, he was going at 105%. And when the ball was in the air, you just, like, it was unbelievable to watch him compete for the football.
Yeah. Yeah. He's so great. He's one of my all time favorite players. Me too. And that's it, when you see guys who can be that aggressive, but in that much control, exactly, that's rare.
And that comes from practicing that aggressive, which some guys, like, that's a big thing too, is some guys don't want to work. Like, the biggest thing that separates guys in the NFL, like, in my opinion, is that there's a floor of athleticism you have to be above to, have a chance at the NFL. But like, it's not like, you got to be one of the top five schools in the country floor, like D2, D3 players. Like, some guys, those great players are over that floor. But then once from there, like, if you are athletic enough, it just comes down to your work ethic, how much work you're willing to put in, how much you're willing to take care of your body and eat right and, stay healthy because you're doing preventative things in the offseason. Then really, like, practice your craft, not just jog through routes. Like Steve Smith, I guarantee you, if you watch him do routes on air in the offseason, he's running those routes as hard as he absolutely can because he knows that's how he has to play in the game. And I think that's something that's really overlooked, that you see all these guys who run the 4.4s and look the part, but they don't make it. It's because of things like that. They think they've arrived and stopped really working on their craft. And this league is so damn competitive. There's guys, fighting for their jobs, fighting for their livelihoods, where all they have is football. So, when that much is on the line, it comes down to really who just wants it more once you've kind of, you got the key, your foot in the door.
Yeah, and two things about this before we move on to some intermediate route talk is just, I know that we just kind of talk about a go route and we could talk about all the different double moves and things like that, but we'll move on to just kind of more intermediate stuff. We'll have you back on, hopefully, to a little bit more with this. But like, one of the things that's interesting to me is that whole concept you talked about, the difference between college and pro, because that's what this show is really about, is trying to evaluate college talent through an NFL lens. And when mm-hmm. you look at that NFL lens, I mean, one of the things that you notice is it's really just like the real world. I mean, when you're out in the real world and you see guys who are incredibly smart, incredibly talented, they get their degree, they get their training, whatever it is, and they go out into the world to make some money. And you can see who are the folks who think, all right, I'm making some money. I'm good where I am right here. This is, I'm happy with this. I like my life this way. I like, you know, doing things in this fashion, and I'm good with mm-hmm. this. And either yeah. they're misguided because they think they've already made it and they can coast a little bit and have fun a little bit more and not keep learning, or they're just simply like, I'm content with this, and I have an accurate gauge of knowing that I'm good enough to be a backup and to get in right. there and play, and they're going to keep me, and I can save some money, and then when it's time for me to go, I can do something else. And then there are the yep. other guys who are like, you know, then there's the guys on the other end of the spectrum who are like, you know, are motivated enough to know that I have a lot more to learn, and it's not about the paycheck. It's not about the lifestyle. It's about, I want to be the absolute best that I can be, and I don't care what anybody else thinks, and I'm going to do whatever it takes. And that mm-hmm. has nothing to do with, I mean, there's coaching that's very helpful, but that has way more to do with what they're going to do to self-develop.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's exactly that. It's the pursuit of, you know, perfecting your craft. And I think I'll take that even like one further, like, you know, guys who settle, I think that like these, all the combine hype that's around nowadays and the physical measurements, is that there'd be all these guys who look the part, who are 6'4", run the 4.3, who, you know, get dubbed like the chosen one based on their athleticism, you know, coming out of college, but, you know, didn't run the full route tree in college, didn't have great technique, but just got by because they were physically superior. And then when they get to the NFL, like, you know, they just get outmatched because there are guys who are just as athletically, you know, just as athletically comparable, but more competitive and more fine tuned in their details. And even you look like the top receivers now, like aside from Julio Jones, a lot of those guys don't look the part as far as being, you know, 6'4", big and fast. Like a lot of, you know, yeah. most of them are fast, but they are all route technicians, from, you know, Antonio Brown to Odell, DeAndre Hopkins, and Keenan Allen. I love watching him play.
Yeah.
You know, like Michael Thomas is a guy that I think is a great, great player and could use a little bit more route detail because he gets a bye by being real big. But he's a guy who's like to me, Michael Thomas is like the football Paul Pierce, where like he's not really fast, but he's just so crafty and so technical and so big that he makes plays. And I love watching that guy play. But all those guys, like it's all route detail in their game, you know, more so than like blazing physical characteristics.
Yeah. And what's funny is that the things that I think I've always kind of been on the rant that speed is long speed's overrated. Short area acceleration is highly underrated by the general public yeah.
Yeah,
position.
Absolutely. And
am I off yeah. base there?
No, I think you're absolutely right. And even more than that, it's knowing how and when to use your quickness. Like, you know, the real art of playing wide receiver to me is really understanding, you know, when to change speeds. And, you know, it's how guys who run 4.8s play 12 years in the NFL, like 4.8 40s play 12 years in the NFL, because, you know, they come off the ball at 82% and then accelerate to 96%. And their 4.8 seems like a 4.4 to the yeah. guy covering them, you know, because they understand the art of when to change speeds, how to attack leverage, how fast, and then burst away. And that to me is what really makes these guys so special, is that it's like a really instinctual thing. You know, to me, I compare it a lot to my players. Like, it's like being in the open court in basketball, like one-on-one in the open court. And, you know, you're going to make your best crossover. And it's not necessarily something that is technically sound. It's your what's been the practice instinct of you, you know, beating a man across his face like that. And it's a lot like winning on a route, you know, with a lot of the quickness and the route detail like that. But the art of changing speed, I think, is really something that all those guys master, and the great receivers really have a great feel for.
Yeah, and man, you showed a great video of that as well the other day, where you're showing, I believe it was a corner route, where you showed just kind of the acceleration into the break there, and yeah. how that speed change really made an impact. And it's just funny because it is. There's people look at somebody like Randy Moss, who's going to the Hall of Fame, and how he attacks a route so fast, or Steve Smith, who attacks a route so fast, and he's going at that full speed, and they play off that perception of, look, the defender's terrified that these guys are going to get by them, even in a yeah. short route. They're terrified that they're going to get beaten so quickly that they mm-hmm. can prey on those expectations with their speed. But there's such a wide range of players who can use just you know, who may not have that level of athletic ability, who still do such great work in the NFL. I mean, my absolute favorite wide receiver in the NFL is Marvin Jones. I mean, I'm a huge fan of, you know, the catch radius and the ability to go win the ball, but I love his route running. I think that he's such a storyteller in terms of, and he has such good variety with how he can run a route that I'm kind of a big fan of some of his game.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about some intermediate routes. I mean, or just kind of some ideas behind running intermediate routes, especially routes that, I guess really, I mean, both, like ones that break in the field, in the middle of the field, and that are outside towards the perimeter. I mean, what are some things that you could share with our audience about running those types of routes that are important?
I think the biggest thing with those types of routes is body control. And it's like I said, being able to tempo your speed in a way that you never really want to be running full speed at the top of the intermediate routes or even the short routes. Like you want to change speeds enough. You want to be running fast enough that you're threatening the defensive back vertical, but you know, not so fast. If you're running at 100%, it's going to be pretty hard to break down efficiently. And the most important thing is your efficiency in the break area. So I would say it's body control. It's understanding how to change speeds, how to be under control at the top of your route, but still, you know, having accelerated before that to push the DB off or whatever it may be, you know, attacking him outside leverage to stretch him outside, and then knowing you're going to slip back inside and have a really great break point. And really the science of having a great break point is body control and being able to have, you know, quick feet with your chest over your toes, everything's in your framework. Like guys slip or don't get out of breaks, you know, whenever their chest is too high, their pad level's too high, or, you know, one of their feet are really far extended outside their framework while their body's leaning the other way. And that's how you don't get explosive cuts. So, you know, it's practicing the defined break points that each coach teaches. Like I teach 5 different break points for whatever the route is. And it's practicing those techniques, but then having great body control at that time.
Okay. So let's get in the weeds a little bit about breaks, because I mean, you gave some really great detail there, but one of the things that you mentioned was getting one of your legs too far outside your body. And I kind of want to, this is for my own information, because I remember watching back in the day, I think it was when AJ Green, Julio Jones, and Greg Little were all in that draft class in, I think, 2011. And I saw some sort of NFL.com clip with Michael Irvin, and Michael Irvin was teaching them like kind of a one long hard step to come to a stop and decelerate, and then break on that route. So when is that either helpful and when is that not helpful?
So to me, when I say that, so to me, it's when you're moving horizontally is when it's not helpful. Moving vertically, you can still extend it way out front of your body, but your body is leaning forward. So your weight is still like, you know, in your framework. You're not like, what you don't want is your legs going one way and your body lean going the other way. And that's what I mean by body control, is always kind of having your chest over your toes or everything within a framework. So moving vertically, you can really do that where you have a hard, violent vertical step. But then moving horizontally, like if you're trying to go left and you're trying to, you know, fake them out to the right and you extend your legs too far and you try to go left too early, you don't finish your break. Especially one thing I tell them, like guys on intermediate routes are anxious to see the football. So a big thing that'll happen to guys is in every break, in every intermediate break, the last thing out of your break should be your eyes. So if you're a receiver, you're running with your head down. So in every intermediate break, the last thing out of your break should be your eyes. Meaning that you need to finish your break, have your chest over your toes, head down, violently trying to run your break. And then once you finish it, so let's say, you know, you're running a 16-yard dig. I call it a speed drop break point, which is, you know, you drop on your inside foot in the direction you want to go. You break on your outside foot violently, and then you round the corner. It's called drop, break, drive line. It's a 4-step break point. So I tell them, you keep your eyes down and your chest over your toes for the full 4 steps, and then you don't show your eyes until right after that break point. And that's just, you know, that doesn't always happen, but that's just the concept for them to emphasize, you know, keeping everything like under control and not trying to get extended too fast. Because when they show their eyes early, that's when they start to look too early. They don't finish their break and a foot slips out from under them, or they don't really explode out. So that's a big concept I use in a lot of the intermediate routes is really teaching when to show your eyes, because that allows you to have better body control.
And you highlighted that extremely well again on some clips I saw last night on Julian Edelman and Odell Beckham Jr., where you showed them, you know, keeping their eyes down through their breaks and that four-step process. I know for Edelman, in some practice clips that you showed, you know, warm-ups before games, which were just those were great. I absolutely love those. I guess the other thing is, what's interesting to me is I look at a guy like Marvin Jones, and we're talking about him and how he tells a story in the stem. Sometimes I always talk about it. Like, I think the way I've talked about it is like Alfred Hitchcock tells this great story, or you told this great story, and it was told by the director, Peter Bogdanovich, where like they were at some film festival or symposium or something, and they were at a hotel and they were talking about the film about some project that they were doing as they were getting into an elevator, and they got in the elevator and Hitchcock was going on and on talking about that. And then about three or four people came into the elevator when it stopped on another floor, and he immediately switched gears and started talking about this like gruesome murder scene that he supposedly saw, and you know how bizarre it was, and there was blood all over the walls, and it was just, and then just where he got to the point, he goes, and then what was even crazier, the elevator doorbell rang and the elevator doors opened, and he just paused and didn't say anything, and everyone was just kind of on their heels waiting for him to like say something, and then he waited for them to all realize that they had to get off at the lobby, and they all left, and then he just started talking about the other topic when they all left, and Peter Bogdanovich was like, what the heck was that? He goes, oh, that's just my elevator story. And it's like, when I think of route running, there's kind of this little, like, it's like a good horror movie or suspense story where you get people waiting and anticipating the wrong thing, and then you like kind of ring the doorbell on them and make them go in the wrong direction, you know.
And I think the like technical answer to that, like, I think that's exactly right, and something you try to do as a receiver is there's always routes that complement off each other that kind of look the same from the start, and so you want to like make those routes look the same, and that's like a real art, is understanding that, you know, for example, we have what we call a stick route, which is a 6 yard square cut out route in the slot. And then we call it a short post, which is really like a slant route in the slot. But we teach it where we get on the guy's toes, you know, attack his leverage and give him your best crossover and cross his face. But those two routes, for example, are complementary. One's breaking out, one's breaking in. But at the stem, they all look the same they should look the same to the linebacker over you. And that's kind of how you tell that story is, you know, he sees it on film. It looks the same, looks the same. You don't have indicators or tells that alert the defender to what route you're running. Because, you know, guys at the highest level watch so much film. So much of the game is reactionary, but it's all like kind of pre-planned, like I said earlier, and almost predetermined. You just have to react fast enough or react hard enough or whatever. Cause so much of this, so many of the techniques and the tendencies are picked up on film because you've watched 60 hours of film in a week, to study every little detail. So, you know, as a receiver, you want to try not to have tells whether you're breaking in or out or, you know, whether you're going deep or short. Like, for example, like when I tell my guys to run a hitch route, you know, I tell them to run through it aggressively and everything's a fade until it's not. Meaning like you got to run it like you're running a 40-yard fade until suddenly you have to break down. And that's the best way to complement that route with, you know, a vertical route and putting the DB on his heels, because it looks, even though you're stopping short, it looks like you're running deep. And there's little techniques and arts to it that way of kind of combining routes so that, you know, for example, like the best one we have is we have like a series of stem routes where you stem inside diagonally to 5 yards, and then you stem it back vertical and you run right at the corner. And at that point, at the top of the route at about 10 yards, once you stem inside, you get vertical to 10, there's 7 different routes you can run. You can break in, you can break out, you can run a post, you can run a curl, you can run a corner. So a lot of teams use that, especially on like the backside of concepts, because the initial stem and then the vertical stem right at the cornerback looks the same every time. And then you can suddenly, you know, break in any direction. It's hard for defenders to cover one-on-one.
Yeah, man. And it's funny. Am I wrong to say that some of the very best pros actually give false indicators of, you know, to a defender to set them up? Like, I mean, literally, like, because I see some routes where I see some of the best where it looks like, it seems to me like the little head fake they gave or the little the little arm move that they gave at a certain point looks like it didn't really matter to them getting separation or getting established where they were, but it seemed to really set up the idea that they were going one way when they're actually going the other.
Yeah. And a lot of that really, a lot of that really comes from film study, and a lot of that is kind of predetermined where you kind of see what each defender is susceptible to, you know, in each coverage and watch, you know, you'll watch one corner play, you know, cover two 75 times during the week where, so you're studying, you know, every situation, how he reacts, and you kind of have a plan of, you know, how to set him up for failure on certain routes, because then, you know, you also know that there's, if you see cover two, or we know it's a, you know, let's say they have a heavy percentage of cover two on first down. So, you know, we have a pass concept called on first down. We only have, you know, six or seven pass concept called. So, which means you only have six or seven routes. So you kind of know you only have six or seven routes because there's only so many pass concepts you have in the game plan for that situation to beat that coverage. So at that point, like all during the week, you've created a plan, you know, to beat that technique on all these individual routes. And you have it, what I'm trying to say, it is like kind of predetermined where, you know, all right, I think I'm going to get him here. And if you don't, like, you know, that guy might be studying the same thing and pick up a tendency and have an answer for it. And that's kind of the game within the game that wide receivers and DBs play, that, you know, throughout an actual football game where they're trying to test what they've seen on film, what's holding true, what isn't, what is he susceptible to, what isn't, like all those things. And you're trying to figure that out throughout the game. Once you feel like he's figured you out, you got to adjust and try a different strategy. And that's, you know, kind of what really separates great receivers, I think, is that kind of battle.
Well, I think we're going to probably end this here, and then maybe we'll hopefully be able to get you back on and we can talk about shorter routes and some other ideas about catching the football and the catch point and attacking it and those types of things that we can get into a little bit more depth with. But one thing I definitely learned today, or was even more of like further validation, is, you know, when we think about the Hall of Fame, you know, induction ceremonies right now, is just how intelligent Randy Moss was as a receiver. Yeah, go ahead. If you want to add anything about Randy, please.
No, I mean, he was great. I mean, I think that a lot of people think he's the best receiver of all time. I think he's at least top two. I think him and Jerry Rice are the argument. But he's incredible. Like, he was incredibly savvy, and I know he worked so hard on his craft. And the thing with him that, you know, really sticks out is just how confident he was. Like, he was always attacking people, but always was so, like, if you watch him, he was great at change of speed. Like, with those long stride lengths, like, you know, he could really disguise how fast he was running because the stride lengths were still the same.
Yeah.
I think that's something that's, you know, that is hard to pick up on for DBs, where, like you said before, they're so threatened by his speed to begin with. You know, he can come out with those long strides, but, you know, be running it 91% instead of 99%, and then stop on a dime on a comeback route or a curl route or whatever. But he was a special athlete. He's one of those guys where, you know, he might be one of the best athletes to ever play the position.
Okay,
For sure.
One last quick question, because I can't help it, and I want to know this just out of curiosity before we end this. Who, other than, you can't name Antonio Brown, and I don't want to hear about Julio Jones either, or Odell Beckham. But who else in the NFL that you would say to someone, watch his game and how he runs routes? And he doesn't have to be a top player either. It can be someone that you just go, you should appreciate how good this guy is as a route runner.
The guy I want people to look out for is this dude, Anthony Miller from Memphis, the rookie for the Bears.
Okay.
Not necessarily because of his route running ability. You know, I think – route running ability, I think Keenan Allen is a great guy to watch. I think he's like a really, really outstanding route runner and detailed route runner who has really made his mark in the league off that, I think, recently. But I think a guy who I just love the way he plays the position and kind of reminds me of a young Steve Smith is Anthony Miller. I think he's very technical, but very competitive. I loved watching him play at Memphis. So he's kind of my like guy that I want people to look out for, more because of the way he plays the game than his route running. But I think Keenan Allen is one of the most exceptional route runners in the league.
Sweet. This has been great, Drew. If anyone who wants to follow Drew, where can you follow him on Twitter?
So the handle is @SidelineHustle. And also our website is thesidelinehustle.com. But you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. You know, we've got YouTube's kind of our video library. Instagram and Twitter is where we're posting content daily. And then the, you know, we have the Sideline Hustle podcast as well, which kind of, like I mentioned in the intro, was He just talks about kind of the business of football, the business of coaching from a coach's and player's perspective, what goes on behind the scenes with a lot of, you know, Division I coaches, NFL players who've done it themselves. So the podcast and all the videos on social media, I think, are the places to check us out. It's the Sideline Hustle, and the handle's at Sideline Hustle.
Wonderful. Drew, this has been fantastic. On behalf of Drew and myself, thanks again for listening to this podcast. If you want to check out more RSP podcasts, your feedback has been wonderful. You can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, as well as, I believe, Spotify now. We'll see. You know, please rate and review if you can. That would be wonderful. And you can check out more of my work at mattwaldmansrsp.com and see a lot of wonderful writers there doing some work, including David Egono, Scott Bischoff, and Mark Schofield, a Wesleyan alum who also played quarterback. Hey, so there you, that's awesome. See, there you go. Thanks again, everyone.
Wesleyan is everywhere, I can tell you that.
Right?